Back here on Downtown 429 on a Monday afternoon, Labor Day. Time for us to welcome in our friend Larry Mahoney from the Bangor Daily News. Hi there, Larry.
Hey, happy Labor Day, Rich.
Thank you, thank you.
Another work day, brother.
Well, yeah, that's right. We salute those who are out there working for a living, and we don't mind being here today doing what we do. I don't want to say it's not work, but we enjoy our job, and that makes it a whole lot easier.
Yeah, it really does. There's no question about that. It really does, and it's, you know, again, that's why we've been at it so long. I think, you know, it'd be easy to say, okay, it's time for something else, or, you know, at 70, it'd be easy, you know, for me to retire, but I'd be bored, and I still enjoy the job. I mean, it's a lot of fun, a lot of work. You look forward to coming to work every day. I mean, there are challenges, but... you know, it's just, you know, we saw a corker, which is a main term, a corker, for entertaining football game on Friday night with Maine pulling out a 2017-14 win. And now high schools get going this week, and Maine gets to go to Montana State, gets to go to Bozeman. You get the trip to the Big Sky Country, brother.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great game. What a beautiful night it was on Friday. Yeah, the crowd was good, and they were certainly enthusiastic. I was hoping for more, but I guess, first of all, it's Labor Day weekend. I know a lot of people are off at camp and doing that kind of thing. And, you know, it's a team that's only won 4 games the last couple of years, and I guess you got to win and win on a regular basis for people to get out there.
Well, it's not a – it's never been. I mean, you've been covering for 30-plus years, and I, you know, again, I've been on and off. I haven't had to beat for, you know, that long, but you know, it's not a really football community, if you know what I mean. It's not like you know, and I'm not sure why. I mean you know, people even after they went to the semifinals for the first time in program history, I mean, they got a bump of about 1,000 a game the following year, but you know, I don't know if it's because they haven't been able to string together like 4 or 5 seasons, or had 4 or 5 seasons in a row with playoff berths or whatever. I know Jude Kelly and the crew, they're trying to, you know, added the fireworks display, adding a lot of bells and whistles and promotions, which I think are very, very important and very useful to try to get people in. And I don't know, maybe part of it, Rich, is just in the fall, people... Let's face it, September, October, two of our best months of the year. And, you know, people like to do outdoor things and maybe not go to a football game. But like I said, I would like to see, again, it's a great entertainment. So the prices are reasonable. So I hope they can get some wins and get people excited and start getting more people. But it's never really been, there was really not been a fever pitch for football at UMaine.
No, I remember. I mean, it's an old story. I remember back in whatever year it was, 89, I guess, when Tom Lichtenberg was here for his one season, and they had drawn about 10,000 fans for a game, which was close to a record. He said, "Man, yeah. I don't know why there aren't more people here. Get yourself an RC Cola and a Moon Pie and watch some football."
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just, you know, there are, you know, like you said, there are pockets of football interest across the state. But, you know, football is, you know, when you think of what they've told me, and, you know, I did get to go to one game, a Wisconsin-Michigan State game, because the hockey team was playing at Michigan State. And it's you know, when you get to the FBS level, I mean, it's a whole different ball of wax at a lot of schools. But then, you know, I think I know, talking to Jude Kelly, who was at Miami of Ohio, you know, and that conference has like Thursday games, and on a cold night I'll watch a game and it'll be like nobody in the stands. So I mean, it's just but you know, again, it's a missed opportunity as far as I'm concerned, because it's a really enjoyable way to spend a Saturday afternoon, or in this case, Friday night. But you know, hey, people have other interests. I mean, you know, I mean, going out and I remember when Maine went and played hockey at Northern Michigan, and I think Northern Michigan was coming off a great year, but it wasn't packed because they said it was the first weekend of hunting season. So there's a lot of different activities nowadays for people, and but you know, again, if you can have a good season and And the other thing too, Rich, is, you know, late October, November games. I mean, I remember my wife and I and Dan Hannigan going to remember that Maine, New Hampshire football game at Orno that was played in the snowstorm.
Yeah, I sure do.
You know, yeah, it was a lot of fun, but you know, obviously people aren't going to be going to that, but, and you know, it's on TV, it's streamed. So, you know, people can sit at home, watch it, or sit at home, listen to you or whatever. And, but you know, let's hope that they can start packing it and getting to get good weather and get some wins and get people interested and put people in the stadium seats.
Well, it was a nice win for the Black Bears in a whole lot of ways. They came from behind, as we were talking about in the break. It got a little scary there at the end when they turned the ball over. But that was the kind of game that the Bears have lost the last couple of years, and they found a way to win this one. And but it's got to be a good feeling for the coaches and the players, too, to have that 1-0 mark. A lot of football to go, but getting that little monkey off your back even for a week.
Yeah, it really is. And it's and again, that's the first time since 2019, as you know, that they've started with a win. They've gone 0-4 in the season opener, and that's something to build on. And again, you're right. I mean, that's the type of game that even when they're up 17-7 with 10:41 to go, I was feeling pretty good. I said, okay, then defense just gonna come out here. Let's get a stop, and then Maine gets the ball, and you know, maybe runs a four-minute offense, runs a lot of clock, and they go on to a comfortable win. But you know, to their credit, Mike Brescia, the quarterback at Colgate, led them back. They got within 17-14 with 4 minutes left. A little over 4.5 minutes left, and then that phenomenal catch by Montego Moss on 3rd and 8 to extend that drive.
Yes.
Because if Maine's punting there with over 2 minutes left, Colgate would have had 2 full timeouts. They had just scored on their last drive. I mean, that could have been ominous. But that play, again, great play by Montego Moss. They extended the drive. Then Jahari Martin with a 15-yard run, another first down. Colgate's got to burn its timeouts. And then you're sitting there and you think, okay, just run 2 plays. Even if you don't pick up the first down on 4th, you know, they get the ball with about 11 seconds left. They have no timeout, so they need a field goal. And from what they were saying in the press box, a field goal kicker wasn't very good. They're in good shape, and then they fumble. And you go, okay, this is going to wind up in overtime, and they're going to wind up losing in overtime. And you know, they're going to wind up snatching a loss out of the jaws of victory. The defense, Kamara came up with the play. The defense, and Jordan talked about it today. Jordan Stevens on the conference call at Blackwood made a nice play keeping his receiver inbounds after he caught the ball to run more clock. And they came out with a win. And, you know, again, mental toughness was something Jordan harped on in the conference call today, too. And the ability to overcome adversity, which they haven't been able to do in recent years.
Talking with Larry Mahoney here on Downtown. What a horribly heartbreaking story from the world of hockey over the weekend with the death of the guy known as Johnny Hockey. What an awful story.
Oh, it's just terrible. You know, they're saying it looked like it was a drunk driver, and he and his brother were at their sister's wedding a few days before their sister's wedding and got run over by a driver. They were both on bicycles, and it's just terrible. Johnny Gaudreau was just an electric player, just fast, shifty, creative, you know, of course, played in Hockey East, and it's just such a sad story. And anytime you lose somebody like that, and his brother and his poor sister, you know, on her wedding weekend. So I mean, thoughts and prayers of the family there. It's hockey's a close-knit community, as you know, and there's only 64 teams in Division I, so you know, you get to know who a lot of the best players are, even within your league and then outside of your league. And he was one of the best.
We were talking about you in studio the other day when Bruce Pratt was here, and he was saying how much he learned about soccer watching a game next to you.
Bruce, cool dude. Yeah, he's a cool dude. I lived in England. My dad was in the Air Force, as you know, so I lived in England and have a tremendous passion for soccer. I've really enjoyed it. I love watching the Premier League. My team, which was in League One, which was in the equivalent of AA baseball 3 years ago, 2 years ago, is now in the Premier League after being promoted twice. Ipswich Town, which is where I lived. I went to 3 of their matches in 1967 when we first moved to England. My dad was, again, we were serving a 3-year tour. And I really enjoy soccer. I love the game. It frustrates me because there are a few tweaks to rules that could really open up the scoring a little bit more, like the offside rule. I really enjoy it, and I love covering it, and it's just one of those things. I think of all the sports I dabbled in, you know, that was the most fun I had ever, you know, when I was playing middle school soccer in England. And it was like, and typical Americans, we were like hornets to honey. You know, all nine of us would go after the ball, and the English kids would just make three passes, and the ball was in the back of our net because they played positionally. They knew how to play positionally. We're all like, like a pack of wolves, all running after the ball, completely abandoning any positional schemes we had. It was a lot of fun. I don't know. I don't know if I would have played it in high school if they had it. I probably would have stuck with football, but I really, really enjoyed it. And I wound up playing in an indoor league, you know, in my 40s or over in Brewer at the ice arena when they had an indoor league. So yeah, it's great fun. I really enjoy the sport.
We were talking about it a few weeks ago, and I told you how big a fan my son is, and then
yes. You
told me to make sure that he cheered for your team after they got promoted. And I said, yeah, my friend Larry, his team, the town he grew up in, got promoted. And Graham said, oh, is he from Southampton? And I said, no. And he said, well, then it must be Ipswich. I said, yes, very good.
Yeah, good for him. That a boy, Graham. Yeah, well, who's Graham's team, you said?
I think it goes back and forth. I think he likes Man City. Oh no! I'm sorry, Man United. Yeah. Got to get that right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They got thumped yesterday by Liverpool, 3-0 at home. Yeah, they've been in flux. They're probably the best known team in soccer, and they're one of nine teams in the Premier League that are owned by Americans, and there are nine others in the Championship, which is the AAA. That's what, for some reason they call it the second year. Second league, the Championship, and then there's League One, which is one where we are Wrexham, you know, documentary, Ryan Reynolds and Hugh McElhenney own that team. So we'll have to wait and see. Keep me abreast of Graham's teams, because if this will be playing one of them, they lost to Liverpool 2-0, then lost to Man City 4-1, and then got a tie with Fulham 1-1. Fulham's a team from London, and one of their best players is Anthony Robinson, who is a U.S. Men's National Team player. But it's fun. It's on TV now. I'm gonna have to go out and probably get Peacock now, because that's the station that carries a lot of
right. Television
in the USA. And NBC. So have you warmed up to soccer yet? Are you kind of like...
Oh, yeah, because I love watching it with him, and he fills me in on stuff. He's got, like I did with baseball cards back in the day, he's got a million soccer cards, so I know...
Oh, wow, cool.
You know, I got an idea who's good, who's valuable, who he wants, and he will watch. I think I was telling you, he'll watch any game. It doesn't matter what league it is, he'll tune in and watch, and knows much more than I could ever know about it.
If you ever get a chance, you and your bride and Graham, if you ever get a chance to go to England, he would absolutely love it, because it's kind of like a big time football in the SEC or ACC or whatever. It's an event. You go there, people are singing. It's fun to watch. I went to a game Ipswich was playing Wolverhampton, and their fans were down below us. And they had what is called, Rich, they're called leaners. They're like these things that you stand and lean on. They're just bars, you know, that you lean on. And they've gotten rid of them now for safety reasons.
Right.
So they play Wolverhampton, and all of a sudden a teacup comes up, hits me right between the eyes. Okay. A few minutes later, an apple core hits me in the right ear.
Wow.
Okay, and then a few minutes after that, a stick comes up and hits about 10 of us on top of the head. Then the game started. I got home, and my mother said, "Have you been in a brawl?" And I said, "No, I just got, you know, again, I was just, I guess we probably two of our loudest Ipswich supporters were standing behind me, and I just happened to be in the line of fire, you know. So, needless to say, Wolverhampton is in the Premier League, and they are my least favorite team, and I hope Ipswich kicks their rear ends twice this season.
Larry, before we let you go, what do you think? A month left in the season. Can this Red Sox team sneak into the postseason, and should they? Will it be good long-term?
No, they're done. They're done, Rich. But that's not a bad thing, because now hopefully they'll bring up, well, they only brought up two, but hopefully we'll get to see some of the young talent that they've got. None of us expected them to be in the race this long, really, with that lineup. And then you got Story goes down, and Giolito never throws a pitch for him. They brought him over to be a middle to end of the rotation starter. Cassis is out for, 4 months? I mean, it's so many injuries. And Whitlock, one of their best starters, he went down for the season. But with Rafael, I got a chance to play, and they've got some good young players. And these, was it Teal, Meyer, Cameron, and Anthony, all these young players who began the season in Portland are up in AAA now, although Meyer's out and done for the season with injury, that's shortstop. But it's going to be probably one of the most interesting off seasons of all time, because you know you've got all these young players, and Boston's impatient. You know that, Rich. They don't want a 3-year rebuild.
Right.
You can't. You know, with the prices they charge us there. I mean, for everything, and they go up every year, no matter how the team does. I mean, this team has to turn things around in a hurry and contend. And now I think they're just, Rich, there's just too many teams now that they've been, they've fallen apart after the All-Star break, and there are too many teams that are in the wild card hunt now. I mean, they're, five out of the third wild card. Now the Tigers are like a half a game behind them, the Mariners. And I mean, I just can't see them salvaging this season in a playoff spot, but that's okay. I mean, it's important that you look at some of your young players, the ones you decide you want to keep, the ones you may want to trade, but, you got to bolster the pitching staff, and then, you know, they could use a few more long ball threats in the lineup. Well, what are your thoughts? What are your thoughts?
I'm with you on that, and I think you're absolutely right. And I think the biggest move they made for next year was the one they already made, and that's making sure Alex Cora is around for the next three seasons.
Yeah. He's very much and some of these pitchers. I mean, you look. There were times this season where I had to go to Google to find who's Criswell.
Right,
where did he come from?
Right.
And some of these guys have pitched well. They really have, and they've got some potential there. But it's going to be for Craig Breslow. It's going to be an interesting off season to see how you mix what you can bring in to get a little more power in your lineup. Even though I love the way they run. They've got two guys in Hamilton and Duran with over 30 stolen bases. Duran, the first player in history with 10, 20, 30, 40, 10 triples. 20 home runs? Was it 20 home runs, 40 doubles, and 30. I don't know. What's the 30 in that?
30 steals.
30 steals. That's right. Excellent.
And what did I hear? The first time they've had teammates with 30 steals in a season since something like 1910.
Yeah, because they've never been a stolen base team.
Right.
They're always a long ball threat team for the most part, other than the years when you and I were youngsters in the 60s when the highlight of a Red Sox broadcast was a Narragansett commercial.
Hi, neighbor.
Because the team was so bad. Yeah, remember those?
I sure do. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, we had Dick Raddatz and Earl Wilson and Billy Mombouquette and Narragansett commercials. And then who was it? Pete Reynolds with 300 every year.
Yeah, and Frank Melzone.
Yeah. And then 67 was a magical year, and 86 broke our hearts. But you know what? Once you win a World Series, you forget all about 1986.
Right.
And
right.
They won four. So we're good to go.
Hey, by the way, your old teammate has a birthday today. Bill Green, 71 today.
Oh, good for him. Yeah. Great, great dude. Yeah, really cool. One of the slowest, one of the real fiery leader, great leader in baseball and football, just a wonderful guy. One of the slowest men on the earth. we had a pitcher named John Gallant on the baseball team, and Coach Bob Kelly, I love Coach Kelly. He had them line up to do a 40-yard dash, Billy Green and John Gallant. Rich, I don't think they finished yet. 71. Yeah, I don't think they've reached the 40-yard mark yet.
They say time in with a sundial.
Yes, very much so. Yeah. But, that was fun. It was the fun times. I think it was 1970, but yeah, it was fun times, and we were fortunate enough to win a state in 71, and Billy was the leader, and and then we had Donnie Sore, great pitching, and then we lost to lost a state game in 72 to Eddie Flaherty, and I don't remember Steve Conley.
Oh yes, absolutely,
140 miles an hour. I remember playing that game. I think I went to the Rotary baseball field and got a little league bat to try to hit off him, knowing because he just, all of a sudden there's a guy he went on a pitch of Maine, as you know, and just all arms and legs, and he just brought it, and then they beat us 7-2, and we won our state game against Westbrook 7-2 the previous year. But no, it was good times, and that was a great Deering team. They really, I think that was, and you know who else they had? They had Gary Smith, who, as you know, made it to AAA, and then
right.
I think he got hurt right before he was going to be called up by the Yankees, and he played 1 year at Maine, was a terrific player.
Larry Mahoney, Bangor Daily News. Larry, great stuff as always. Appreciate you making time for us on this Labor Day. We'll catch up with you again soon.
Yeah, I hope so. I'll come up with another song.
Perfect. Let us know. We'll be ready for it.
Yeah, we'll get away from Tony Burrow, so we'll give Tony the week off.
All right. That's a plan. You got it. Thanks, Larry.
Okay, Rich. Take care. Safe trip to Montana.
Thanks so much.